Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Parents out there, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever you may be, if you have a child in your life, you know that there are so many things stacked against you, right? I mean, we've got to figure out and sort of guide our way through, how do we raise our kids the right way? How do we make sure they're good people? How do we make sure they work hard, that they're, you know, all of those things. There's no book telling us what to do. Gosh, I wish there was a book. It would really help me out. And I'm sure a lot of you can agree with that. But something that comes up very often lately, it seems, and it actually was one of our top stories this morning. It was also our Facebook question of the day. How do you manage talking to your children when it comes to their weight, healthy eating options? Do they exercise enough? Those are very important topics that sometimes we should lead by example, but sometimes people don't do that, or maybe that's not the answer. But we always have questions. Are we doing the right thing? And Weight Watchers just came out with a new program, Curbo, which is a diet app for children. It's getting a lot of backlash this morning. And ironically, we had already talked to Jenny Curry, who's a licensed professional counselor. You may remember she was on our show last week. And we had talked actually right after the show, and Jenny brought this topic up. And I said, I love this topic because I myself have struggled with a food addiction. I know that many parents want to know what's the right way to handle this. And Jenny has so much expertise on this. It's ridiculous. So the timing couldn't be better. Jenny, we're so glad you're joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So first of all, just because we have already kind of talked a little bit about Curbo, what are your initial thoughts on that? We won't get too into it, but just wanted to know what your initial thoughts were when you heard about it.
Yeah, I think it definitely can do more harm than good. I was pretty horrified as I was reading about it. All of the concerns that were listed in that article and the flack that they've gotten about it, I totally agree with, because I think it really can be detrimental and potentially lead these kids down a path with eating disorders, with negative body image. And I just feel like the focus is totally in the wrong place.
Well, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jenny, but I think sometimes when we pull kids' attention away from the human world and into the technology and social media world, You now have taken a huge part out of the equation of maybe fixing a problem that may or may not be there. And that's either your parents or getting guidance or having professional help like yourself. You kind of take that right out of the equation when you're like, hey, here's an app. Now figure it out.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I didn't even think about that, but that's totally true. And, you know, it also then, on a different level, probably sends a conflicting message, right? Because we're telling them less technology, but then we hand the phone back to them to track what they're eating and their weight. And as much as Curbo tries to say that it's a positive thing and they're not trying to elicit negative feelings in these kids, it's going to happen. It just does by nature of the format of the product.
Yeah, and again, we're speaking with Jenny Curry. She's a licensed professional counselor, and she's a teacher. She is a mom herself. She's just somebody we love to go to on ways to kind of talk to our kids, maybe about some topics that are a little challenging for the average parent. And we're talking about sort of the relationship between your kids and food. So how would you go about talking to your kids if maybe you notice, you know what, maybe my child's struggling a little bit, or maybe she or he is, a little bit heavier than the doctors would like, or feels a little self-conscious in their classroom. How do you even go about addressing that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, first of all, when I worked in Center for Discovery in the residential treatment program for adolescents with eating disorders, I learned so much. It was invaluable, and it changed the way I look at the world. It changed the way that I parent, and it really challenged some of the other beliefs that I had about food and what's good and what's not as far as approaching it with our kids. And I think, you know, one of the things that I took away from that is that all foods fit. That was always their mantra, and that, you know, it's about moderation. And I think never vilifying a certain food is a really, really good place to start. And because otherwise kids will associate a very negative feeling with those foods, and a lot of times it can be very guilt-inducing. And I think we want to help them come alongside of them and educate them on different foods that maybe we want to eat more often than others. But I think as much as possible, if we can keep it positive and also have our kids be a part of the process and have them cook with us and shop with us and just make that fun. And if we do notice that, you know, there is some overweight type things happening there with our kids, I think, first of all, I would recommend that you go to the pediatrician maybe before the appointment, if you know that this is going to be a topic of discussion, and have a talk with the pediatrician about how they're going to address it in that visit with your kids. Because so often I found that a lot of my clients, some of their first negative memories were when they had gone to a pediatrician and the pediatrician made some comments about their body that really stuck with them and kind of started them on a path to an eating disorder. So I think talking with the pediatrician first about how they're going to frame that with your child is really important. And then I think really a focus on the physical aspect of it and not scaring them, but kind of really helping them to understand, you know, if there is some overweight tendencies happening, that they just understand the ramifications of that for their health. But again, it not being on weight per se and not ever equating their weight with their value, because kids can so easily and quickly surmise that from what is said and what is not said.
We're talking to Jenny Curry of the Jenny Curry Counseling Services. She is a licensed professional counselor, actually right here in our listening area. And Jenny and I have been talking about the relationship between your children and how they view food. How do you as a parent address it? Maybe if your children are struggling with their weight, or maybe you have some concerns about it, how do you go about that? And Jenny, you were just talking about how there are some tools that parents can use to make sure that their kids don't have lasting, I'd say almost nightmares that stick with them. Things like when you go to the pediatrician, make sure you talk to them a little bit before about the sensitivities on that topic before they just sort of say something that maybe your children will keep in their minds until they're adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and I think too, really being cautious of, again, how you present food to them and not vilifying certain foods as bad or good. And even honestly being cautious of, you know, labeling healthy versus unhealthy, right? Because our kids are going to surmise from that good or bad. And being cautious too of what we restrict. You know, if you are in a home where the parent is extremely restrictive about sweets, what I found is that a lot of times those are the kids who then end up hiding the food in their rooms and are eating it and binging and develop like a binge eating disorder. Or, you know, on the other extreme, you can also have the parents who are, again, restricting themselves, which we find too that a lot of kids who struggle with eating disorders, their parents have struggled as well. So they are restricting and then the kids restrict, and it kind of becomes this mentality in the home that only certain foods are okay. And they get so conditioned that, you know, they're presented with something else that might be considered unhealthy, and they experience horrible guilt, a lot of anxiety, and it just doesn't set our kids up to have kind of a balance. And so I think presenting the fact that all foods can fit somewhere, it's just that some we may eat more than others, is a good place to start in making it fun. You know, because I remember when I was working in residential treatment, and a couple of things stood out to me, and two of them were, one, we were eating meals with the kids, and these kids were as young as 10 years old. And I remember one night a girl just completely melted down because she had to have white rice and she couldn't have brown. And to her, white rice was like the devil. It was like horrible. Mm. And she couldn't handle it. And then another one where it was a challenge for the day that they had to have a donut. And it was like somebody died. I mean, it was just like the emotion around the table was so, so sad. And they were so anxious. And I just walked away from that thinking, you know, I want my kids to be healthy. But I think almost even more than that, I want them to have a really good self-esteem and body image. And if they're a couple pounds over the recommended weight, but they love who they are, I think I would take that any day over a kid who is perfectly within the BMI, but doesn't like who they are. And we as parents have a huge, huge influence on how we can help them frame that and how they can see themselves.
And I think, Jenny, you bring up such a great point, especially when you have parents that maybe they struggled with it. I know in our own household, just to sort of humanize the situation, mm-hmm. I know for myself, I was diagnosed with a food addiction 5 or 6 years ago. My husband has always been a foodie. I mean, he can lose and drop weight as fast as he wants to. But we both, now having a one-year-old, we've said, you know, we need to change these habits and change, you know, not so much having bad food in the house or things like that, but like you said, just having a wide range of things and not looking at things as this is good, this is bad, but if we eat this way, maybe he'll follow eating this way. And I don't know your thoughts on leading by example. I mean, I've heard of the situations where, honestly, Jenny, it actually blows my mind. I've been around friends' houses or family friends where the mother and father are in great shape and most of the children are in pretty good shape, but there's like one or two who are maybe could lose some weight. And you see the mom and the dad are just almost like munging on whatever they want. And they're criticizing what their child's eating, which is the same thing they're eating. And it's not really fair in my eyes, but maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
No, I don't think that's fair at all. And I think that reinforces that negative vibe and message that the child is going to internalize and then feel like a bad, defective person. And that's totally a double standard. And so, I mean, I think as much as possible, everybody kind of eating the same things and yes, leading by example, of course, but definitely not having a double standard. I feel bad for that kid.
I know. It's something that, I won't name names, but it sticks with me a lot of the time. And I think that just was bizarre. I just don't know if I could ever do that. It's crazy. But Jenny, I know, like you said, I know we're kind of running out of time, but I know you have a lot of expertise in this topic specifically. So, you know, if there are some anxious parents out there, maybe not even with newborns or anything, but maybe they've got a 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old who is in the thick of it and they just feel like, what can I do? What is like a good clean slate start? What can they do to help kind of jumpstart that process of helping their children?
Well, let's see. I mean, depending on the age, of course, the older they are, the more capable they are of having dialogue. So I think especially those older elementary age kids, maybe just having a talk with them too about what they think about food and how they view food and how they view themselves. And then, you know, again, maybe they just say, let's go to the store and we're going to plan some fun menus and we're going to get some ingredients. And also, you know, not as far as eating, but the exercise portion, which is closely related, and maybe even just talking about, well, what are some fun things that we can do to get some fresh air and get some exercise and just have a healthy or just an active lifestyle. And again, I hesitate to even harp on healthy or unhealthy because I think they can kind of vilify. But again, what are some new things that we want to try and which have a little more of and which things do we have a little less of?
I love that. I think really the big thing, Jenny, is that you're working as a team. You're not letting your kids sort of just figure it out and then up too little too late. Now you're in this state as a teenager or a young adult. And I think you totally get that. And it's just so nice to be able to talk to you. Jenny, if anybody wants to get in touch with you or learn more about some of your services, where can they go?
So I have a website, and they can go to www.jennycurriecounseling.org, and I have my information and also a page where you can send me a message.
Jenny Curry, we appreciate you weighing in on the conversation and giving us amazing insight, really, on a topic that I think a lot of parents can never get enough advice on. So thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
It's time for our question of the day. Your turn to weigh in on the conversation. Earlier this morning, we talked about Kurbo, K-U-R-B-O. If you've never heard of it before, that's because it's brand new. Weight Watchers created a new program. It's a diet app for children. It's specifically for kids. And when you look at the app, it actually highlights children as young as 8 years old sharing their weight loss stories. Weight Watchers says that this is meant to be more of a family app, something that the whole family goes through so that the children see, hey, mom and dad are also doing this. I should do it too. But the way that it's been advertised is that it's a way for kids to keep track of what they're eating, see if what they're eating is even okay. There are different rankings on there, things that are considered green foods, as in foods that are okay to eat whenever you want, yellow foods that are okay sometimes, and red foods that they should stay away from. As a parent and as somebody who myself, I have a food addiction, and I know I too have struggled with trying to determine how to live a healthy lifestyle. And I think my parents did an amazing job of leading by example, never body shaming me, never making me feel self-conscious. And, you know, and when I look back at pictures, I'm glad that they never had something like this, an application for me to put on my phone. Because when I look at the pictures, I think to myself, that's a normal, healthy looking girl. But a lot of times we have these images in our heads that we're worse than what we are. And the other half of it is there's no question there's an epidemic in the world. No one's denying that obesity is on the rise. We know it's a problem. But I think sometimes when you have applications on kids' phones or ways for them to track themselves, and you take parents or guidance or leaders out of their lives, out of the equation, and they're just relying on an app, I don't know. That to me is not really the way I'd go about parenting, but maybe you feel differently. So we posted it on Facebook. The question was, how do you talk to your kids about their health and making sure that they're eating healthy and watching their weight? Steven put it very simply, very similar to my parents. He said, it's easy if you lead by example. So if you and your husband, you or your partner, you decide, you know what, we're going to make healthy meals. We're going to have healthy snacks at the end of the day when they come home, you know, or maybe you yourself talk to a nutritionist and find out what's the best thing for your kids. You can then relay that back to your children without them feeling like you're putting the target on their back and that they have a problem. Deborah said, actions speak louder than words. Provide lots of fresh options. Keep processed food out of the house. It certainly is harder and harder to find that non-GMO food. And sometimes it's really not bad when you have GMOs in your food. Unfortunately, we don't have as many resources as we used to. Let's be honest. We have not taken a very good care of our world, and we don't have all that option to not just have processed foods. However, she makes a very valid point that there are certainly foods out there that are just simply made of nonsense. We don't even know what's in half of the ingredients of certain things. And be sure to check those labels. If it sounds like something you can't pronounce, it's probably not something you want to eat. Definitely some good advice, Deborah. Lucille says, I limit the snacks they eat. That's certainly a great way to go about it, Lucille. I know in our house, if it wasn't fruits or veggies or things like that, we didn't really have snacks in the house, to be honest. You couldn't really get to cookies or chips or things like that. That was more of if you were at a party and they were offered, you could have them then. And Margie Sargent said, personally, I think this would be very bad for a child. She's referring to the app. Better to show them how to eat healthy. Also teach them that food is how you fuel your body for activity. So some days you need more and some days you need less. A kid who genuinely needs help should get it from a medical professional, not a group who profits from weight loss. Talk about setting kids up to view food as an enemy. Interesting stuff, Margie, especially because we saw many people have already signed a change.org petition to take down this app and eliminate it. Now, as Weight Watchers continues to fight that, many people, including nutritionists, health experts, they say this is just going to make kids feel self-conscious. It's going to play into kids wanting to have eating disorders. And you're just asking for, again, they're kind of managing it with an app. They're not really including experts or parental guidance or anything. They're kind of taking that out of the equation, and it could cause a bigger problem for your kids in the end. At least that's what a lot of people are saying. And I have to say, I kind of agree with that. And it seems like a lot of you do too.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And on Mondays, you know it is Crime on the Mind, which means we have Lieutenant Jim Perez joining us live right now. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So, Jim, this was actually one of our top stories we talked about earlier in the show today. I know I'm kind of throwing you a curveball, but I'm sure, obviously, you're so in touch with things. The three arrests that were made between Friday and Saturday, obviously, they weren't all in Connecticut, but one was in Connecticut. Three potential mass shooting suspects that were arrested. Obviously, there was the one in Norwalk, 22-year-old Brandon Wagshaw, and then there was one that was made in Daytona Beach, Florida, Tristan Scott Wicks, and another that was made in Ohio. I have to say, I just feel like these are the stories that go unheard. We talk so much about the actual mass shootings that happen that these go so undetected. I think this is amazing police work, the fact that they were able to stop mass shootings from happening.
Yeah, I think what happens is that, you know, police historically, we don't normally brag about the things that we prevent happening because that's just part of our job. It's what we do. So whether you're an FBI agent, a state police officer, or a local officer, every single day police officers do exactly what just happened here. They prevent things from happening. There's you know, so if you look at violent indicators and things that can happen, during the planning stages, most police departments across the country will stop a lot of these terrorisms or mass shootings from actually happening. And you're right. You never hear about that. The only time you hear about is when something actually does happen or somehow it gets through the loop of the police departments or they have no knowledge of it, and then it results in injuries or death. So it was excellent police work by all involved, from federal to state partners, all involved did a fantastic job.
Well, and I think too, Jim, another takeaway from these three, the fact that they happened within 24 hours, it sounds like, at least I know when I was reading, I was really in-depth reading, honestly, because I knew all about the Norwalk incident, but the Tristan Scott, apparently the one in Florida, it all came from his ex-girlfriend who alerted authorities, hey, you know what, he threatened that he was going to do this, and I'm worried about it, so I'm sending you a message. And I think that speaks volumes that sometimes we say, you know, if you see something, say something, but that doesn't always actually happen a lot of the times, and that's when these things go undetected.
Right. There are many loved ones that love their family members. They love their partners that they're with, but they also will report them when necessary. And there are scores of parents and loved ones across the country that have actually reported their family members or their loved ones, and the police actually follow up on it. Listen, I've often said two things. Number one, when someone sees what I like to call not normal or something that's not usual, it's important that you report it. Even if it's a colleague, a fellow student, a family member, a friend, law enforcement cannot operate solely as an island. That's never going to happen. We could do it, but it would never be successful. It's the input of the community and information that we get from the community that actually not only strengthens the community, but can actually prevent crimes from happening, and it also solves crimes that do happen.
We are talking to Lieutenant Jim Perez, who's with the Fairfield Police Department, our crime prevention expert. And before, we were just talking about how there were three arrests made over the weekend where police, FBI agents were able to stop potentially mass shooting suspects from going through with their plans. And Jim, again, we talked about how it's an amazing effort, sort of silently done by police, but also by the community. And we do applaud everybody who was able to bring the three people who were accused of these horrible plans. They're now in custody, which is great.
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you, this isn't, you know, locally for us, this isn't the first time that this has happened. If you remember a few years back, the University of New Haven had an incident where a student had two handguns and a long gun, and he took the long gun out of the car He was parked in a little commercial strip shopping center. He took the long gun out of the car and put it in the trunk. It was a witness who saw that actually reported it to police, and West Haven police was able to actually, along with University of New Haven police, they were able to actually stop this incident from happening. You know, oftentimes people don't understand. Maybe they understand and maybe they don't understand, but let me explain how violent attacks happen. It always starts with an idea, right? Then it goes into the planning phase, and then they actually get whatever material it is that they're going to get, and then they actually implement, whether it's an IED, a bomb, or a gun, or whatever, what have you. In each one of those steps, there's always what I call leakage. That's information that's given out that someone can pick up on. And fortunately, we do have members in our community who actually pick up on those leakage or those violent indicators, and they report it out to police. And this is how we can prevent these things from happening. So we need more involvement from the community, and we need for the community to not only support your local, state, and federal police departments or agents all over the place, but you also need to give information. The old adage, see something, say something, is very real. Not normal will save your life. If you witness or see not normal in your everyday life, it's important that you pick up the phone and you call your local police department. Don't feel, I get feedback from people saying, well, I don't want to bother the police. I say bother them. That's what your tax dollars are paying for. So you know what? Call your police department, let them handle it, let them take care of it. They're professionals. They get trained, and that's the reason why they're here.
Jim, I will ask a quick question, because I know just from this segment, it's become very popular, and we actually did have somebody call a couple weeks back when we talked about the mass shootings that had happened in Dayton, Ohio, and also in Texas, in El Paso, and they asked a really great question, which mm-hmm. I think sometimes people will say things in passing like, oh, I could just kill everyone, or sure. Oh, I could just kill myself, you know, whatever. It's not okay mm-hmm. to say, but people will say it, and then because we live in a world where it's see something, say something. What if you're somebody who does report on someone, whether it's something that was written on Facebook or something you overheard them saying, and you totally misjudged that situation, and it turns out that they really are okay, they just maybe misspoke or misstepped or whatever. I think sometimes there are people who fear they're going to misreport somebody, but you still say we should do it. I mean, because it's right. Better being wrong than not, right?
That's right. You should always report. Now, listen, I'm not saying go out and start harassing someone or making up things
right.
to try and get someone in trouble, but I will say, because that does, unfortunately, that does happen. But I will say this, it is much better that you have a local, state, or federal department investigate a threat and then let the police. This is what we're trained for. We're trained to actually go out, and through the investigative process, we literally can come up with the information on whether we're going to corroborate that this actually happened or whether we're going to be able to disprove it. So that is law enforcement's job. And when we do prove it, we then send them to court. Then it's up to the court to adjudicate it at that point. And so my point is there are you know, steps in place that are meant to verify or disprove something. So if you see something, or it doesn't hurt to actually call the police department and let them know, because you never know whether in fact we're working on something already that's connected to that or not. Listen, if I have time for a second, I just want to explain something. I want you to look at the criminal justice system, or I want you to look at investigations like a puzzle. So you grab a puzzle with 75 pieces, 100 pieces, and you toss it in the air. We eventually, law enforcement, will find most of the pieces of the puzzle. But someone might step on a piece of the puzzle and take it with their shoe. They might have it in their car. The bottom line is someone out there has that final piece of information that we actually need to bring the investigation to a conclusion. And oftentimes, people out in our community, they have those pieces of the puzzle. They just don't know it sometimes. So it's important that when you say something to us, we can sometimes recognize that piece of the puzzle and be able to solve the crime. If you can understand that, that's pretty much an investigation through a law enforcement department that becomes successful.
No, it makes an awful lot of sense, that's for sure. And I think just reiterating that if you do have information and you give it to police, you don't have to reveal your identity. I mean, maybe they'll ask on the phone, hey, for our records, can we get it? But it's not like when a newspaper or like when radio or when TV, when we call and say, hey, who gave you that tip? The police aren't mm-hmm. going to reveal that. The person who you report should not find out who you are if you're scared of that.
I'll even go further than that. The state has passed, smartly so, the state has passed a law within the last year where you can now text
information. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can text information without ever revealing yourself. The Fairfield Police Department has had this system for a few years now where we actually, where you can actually text us a message with an issue and your number, your phone number is erased as soon as you give that text. So we don't even know the origination of that call, but we do know that there's information that we now have to follow up on. And this happens pretty much every day everywhere. But that's what criminal investigations is about. It's about people coming forward. And, you know, and I've said this a lot of times and I'll say it again. The level of service that you get in any particular town, it has a correlation or a direct relationship to the police department. So if your community supports your police department, then guess what? You're gonna, whatever that societal norm is that we decide that should be enforced or should not enforce is going to get done. And that's the way it is. And I think that when people don't come forward, it makes it a lot more difficult for law enforcement to investigate, and it could take a lot longer. Sometimes we might never solve a crime. But when people come forward with valuable information, that piece of the puzzle that I talk about, then they give us that piece of the puzzle and we can now complete that puzzle. That's what helps us solve crime. That's what helps us keep the community ultimately safe.
Well, Lieutenant Jim Perez, we're so glad that we could talk to you about this, and certainly really, really great advice, especially going forward, coming from this past weekend and seeing three success stories, local police, FBI working together, taking down three potential mass shooting suspects. We appreciate your insight this morning. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a great week.